Regarding an outfit that Dave was with. It was called McCormick's Raiders. Well, this was with the three-quarter cavalry, and a group got together, typists and clerks from the headquarters of the company, the three-quarter cavalry, who wanted to go out in some combat. Well, they didn't do anything. Maybe Dave should mention a little bit about what they did. But this is something that the media picked up. It was a funny story, McCormick's Raiders, and it meant nothing. Well, a TV crew came out and did a big thing on it. Reader's Digest picked it up. They wrote about this group. It was nothing. It had nothing to do with the war. This is what the press in Saigon was looking for.
Dave, would you just give us a little bit of a rundown on McCormick's Fearsome Raiders?
Yeah, this is more like Mikhail's army, I guess. These were, this is the sorriest group I ever saw of people. There was about 20 of them, ranging from cooks, clerks, mechanics, and they decided he was going to start going on an operation. And they only let him go out about 100 yards from base camp because they didn't want anything really to happen to him because they couldn't take care of themselves. And so all of a sudden, they picked up on the story and built it up how we had been stopping supply routes at night and everything. And a guy from Reader's Digest comes out and does a fabulous story about these great Americans who have such a secure job. And a film company comes out and wants to do a little film of it. So at the most, we took them 100 meters from base camp because these people didn't want to go too far anyhow. And they were throwing hand grenades, and it sounded like a real war was going out there, and this guy was, you know, taking all kinds of pictures and was crouched down and talking real soft, like, you know, like it was really a big thing. In reality, if they wanted to go, they should have went in the Iron Triangle with us instead of 100 yards from base camp if they wanted to see the war.
We'd write about the funny things and pretend it was a big party over there. This was our job, keep up morale. And yet, this is what the civilian press from Saigon would pick up on. This was the kind of stuff they liked, just the happy times.
Well, the reporter doesn't work like a reporter does for in the United States for a civilian newspaper. He's given assignments. He doesn't go out and look for them himself. He doesn't have a beat. He's told by an officer what to cover. That's the main way that we're given, told what to do. The information, the stories we write about aren't news as such. We had to write, sometimes I thought, very trivial stories. One time I was assigned to do a story on state flags. I was supposed to go around to various units and find out how guys were displaying their state flags. I went to some units, some of these truck convoys, where guys were getting up at 4 in the morning, driving oil tankers out to the 25th Infantry Division, coming back at 11 at night after having been ambushed often, and asking these guys if they had any state flags. They thought it was just absurd. Here they were constantly being shot at, and this stuff wasn't getting in the newspaper. We had to write things for troop morale. It was, very rarely did we write anything. Well, we actually never wrote things that were news, and I'm afraid often this information was typed up and given in press releases to the civilian press, and not too often did they come digging for the real stories.
Well, we've heard a lot about the information officer with the red pencil, and that was me. Before I begin in my rap here, I want to make just a couple points. One is that just a little while ago, during part of the press censorship testimony, a film crew from a local radio, a television station, which was sitting in the front row, got up and left without... What? It was CBS Network TV. They didn't shoot any pictures of press censorship, which is a form of censorship, I guess.
Mike Wallace works for CBS.
Many times, since I've been back, I've been working with veterans groups, speaking. Many times I've been asked, when I talk to groups, please hold down the obscenities. And Sunday night, one of the psychiatrists on the panel here expressed some concern about the legitimacy of the hearings because his wife had complained to him about somebody had said mother. You know, I can't relate to that at all. When you talk about an experience, you relate that experience in the terms of the language of that experience. If you're talking about the street, you use street language. If you're talking about war, you use war language. There is a war language. It's a very deliberately contrived language which allows you to express yourself using a minimum of the English language. There's lots of talk nowadays, you know, about war. War is on everybody's lips, the word war. Parents, grandparents, anywhere you go to a cocktail party, anywhere you go, it's war this, it's war that. Even little kids, you know, are hip to the war. They know something's going on and they talk about war. So war is used a lot, and nobody seems to mind. That's what I want to say, is that if there's anybody in this room who thinks that the word war, who thinks that the word fuck is more obscene than the word war, you know, then you're more obscene than the word fuck.
Right on.
As I said, I was the red pencil. These guys were out in the field, getting shot at, getting the news, taking pictures. When it came to me, I took out my red pencil and I went to work. Now, as an information officer, I was given a set of orders. These orders were stated either verbally or in writing from officials of the information offices in Saigon, from McAwey, McVie, or my division chief of staff. Matters concerning foreign policy or overall military planning and activity or special forces or CIA activities, this fell under the jurisdiction of JustPal or the embassy. The following is just a partial list of things that I was to red pencil, and I did. You'll recognize some of these from the previous testimony. Effectiveness, ineffectiveness or mistakes of the Arvin Army. Handling, processing, interrogation or treatment of prisoners of war. Use of shotguns. Use of flamethrowers or flamethrower tracks. Use of lethal, non-lethal gas or gas dispensing methods or gas masks. Female VC, very young VC, Huey Cobra helicopters, information on the size, accuracy, and range or effects of the enemy 122 millimeter rocket, M16 rifle malfunctions or deficiencies, extent of damage and number of U.S. casualties from any enemy attack, any story concerning enemy tenacity, courage, or ingenuity, marriage of U.S. personnel and Vietnamese nationals, U.S. soldiers' use of pot or drugs, conditions of U.S. military stockades, anything about the CIA or CIA-sponsored activities, Project Phoenix, Air America, anything about U.S. activities in Cambodia or Laos, B-52 or other bombing errors, burning, bulldozing, destruction of Vietnamese hamlets, anything about troop morale, pro or con, information about captured enemy material of U.S. manufacture, the NLF, napalm, enemy armor or helicopters, plus anything else that Saigon felt might be detrimental to U.S. causes. Now, I'll run through the list very lightly and just give you some specific examples. Handling, processing, and interrogation of prisoners of war. Although there was a POW compound in Kuchi, Standard Division policy was to deny its existence, to refuse to take anybody, newsmen or civilians, to the area where it was located, and we ourselves were denied access to that compound. Vernon's testimony just a few minutes ago, he mentioned a photograph taken by the 25th Infantry Division, well, taken by himself, for the 25th Infantry Division of two MPs carrying a Vietnamese suspect, captive, we don't know, who'd been bound and had a sandbag tied over his head. He said it came back stamped, not cleared for release, per MAC OI. Here is a Xerox copy of that photograph. I'm sorry if you in the back can't see it. It's just a photograph. It shows the two MPs carrying the man right across the front is stamped, not cleared for release per MAC OI. Stories about female VC were sometimes cleared and sometimes not. If the story emphasized the bravery or determination of women guerrillas, it was, of course, killed. If, on the other hand, the story made a point of how VC were hurting so bad from U.S. presence, they were forced to recruit women who supposedly were not as good fighters, the story would pass. This policy was never well defined, but as a general rule, VC women's stories were not to be used. I submitted a story about a woman VC. I'll read you just a bit of the story. It's about an ambush of U.S. units. Sweeping the ambush site, the GIs found that two of the dead guerrillas were packing automatic weapons, but their real surprise was the enemy point man, who was actually a point girl. She was leading the VC when the ambush was sprung and died with a 45 caliber pistol in her hand. This clash is but one of several in recent weeks which involved female VC. In one case, a U.S. patrol was attacked by a guerrilla unit led by a submachine gun-toting girl who one U.S. soldier described as very attractive, but a bad shot. Across the bottom of this press release, it says, not cleared for release, MAC OI. This is a Xerox copy of it. Attached to that is a censor sheet from the U.S. Infantry Information Office, United States Army, Vietnam, signed by William Capp, Chief of the Clearance Branch, PID. And it says, quote, remarks, not cleared for release per MAC OI. On occasions, in isolated cases, stories of U.S. killing women has been cleared, but any such story draws a bad light on our forces. A girl killed in an ambush at night doesn't help our image. Agreed, she may be dangerous, but the press always doesn't see it that way. Here's a copy of that right here. I'll be glad to show this to anybody after the testimony. Very young VC. General policy here was the same as with VC women. That is, stories emphasizing the courage of young VC were not to be released. While stories indicating the U.S. pressure was forcing the enemy in such dire straits as to recruit young VC, this occasion would be cleared. As I said, though, the policy was ambivalent and was never consistent. Here's a picture of a VC who was known to have killed at least five U.S. soldiers. He's 11 years old. Story and photo not cleared for release. Photo was taken by an information specialist. The boy was captured, yes. I'll answer questions later. These are Xeroxes. I'm sorry, for obvious reasons, I don't carry the originals with me. Information on the size, accuracy, or range of the effects of enemy 122-millimeter rockets. During the offensive, Tet Offensive in 1968, the VC began using Chinese-built 122-millimeter rockets to bombard U.S. bases and positions. GIs were intimidated by the rockets' long range and terrific power. In February 1968, I submitted a story and a photo of the first intact rocket to be captured by the 25th Division, which is also, as far as we knew, the first rocket ever found in Vietnam. MACV killed the story and instead sent a team out to take the rocket back to Saigon, quote, for examination. And here's the photo that accompanied this story. It shows a GI standing with the rocket beside him. And I'm sorry if you can't see it, but the rocket is about a foot taller than he is and bigger around than his neck. M16 malfunctions and deficiencies. In 1967, rumors of numerous M16 malfunctions were getting back to Congress. U.S. Representative Richard Eichord, my representative, launched an investigation of the Army's much-ballyhooed rifle, even sending a team of experts to Vietnam to question GIs.
Mac V told all information offices prior to my arrival that the M16 was not a topic of discussion. Newsmen were not to question soldiers about the weapon, and no stories about the rifle jamming or malfunctioning were to be written. This was done despite the fact that many GIs hated the M16, felt they couldn't trust it, and until an order stopped the procedure, many carried other weapons instead, carbines, 45, grease guns, etc. At the same time, the Army launched an all-out propaganda campaign to make GIs in Vietnam more confident in the M16. Special classes were held on the weapon, new cleaning procedures were instituted, new lubricating materials were introduced, due in large part to GI pressure from the use of a commercial lubricant called Dry Slide here in the States. And a whole campaign was initiated to instill the American soldier with confidence in a weapon that he basically mistrusted. Marriage of U.S. personnel and Vietnamese. It was specific Mac V, Mac OI, and Just Pal policy that nothing ever be said about American-Vietnamese marriages. I never saw any official written statement on this policy, but it was general knowledge that mixed marriages would be discouraged in every way possible, including the withholding of the information on what making, you know, for making the necessary arrangements would be. GIs would frequently ask us in the information office what the procedures were, since we were information officers. It took me 2 months to get a clear statement of the procedure from Mac V for publication. I have a copy of that here. I won't read it. I'll only read the headline. It said, minimum of 3 months required to marry alien. In Vietnam, this was the story written. There's an interesting point here. The process takes at least 3 months. If a GI applied to his CO, filled out the necessary paperwork, the CO, more likely than not, would hold the application until the GI had less than 3 months to go and would then forward it to the necessary headquarters. This put the GI, who was really in love with the Vietnamese girl, in a sort of a situation. He could either give up the marriage or he could extend for 6 months, spend six more months killing Vietnamese in order to marry a Vietnamese girl. I think you'll agree that's a truly untenable position.
One quick announcement. The AmeriCal Division testimony individuals are meeting in the vets room now.
Anything about CIA, CIA-sponsored activities, or Air America? Although the headquarters for a large 5th Special Forces group was located in our area of operation at Tay Ninh and at Nui Ba Dien, which Ron on the end of the table talked about, Nui Ba Dien being one of the staging points for the mercenary snatch teams and hatchet teams, our information division office was forbidden by Just Pow directive from publicizing or discussing any Special Forces operations or policies. I was ordered that my response to all inquiries, information of this nature, was no comment. Anything about U.S. activities in Cambodia or Laos? Just one instance. Second week of January 1968, elements of the 25th Infantry Division's 1st Brigade, this is January 1968, during Operation Yellowstone, crossed the Cambodian border and conducted an objective, an air assault on objective area near the Cambodian village of Khi Phang Long. This is about 6 clicks or kilometers inside the Cambodian border. 4th Battalion, 9th Infantry conducted a helicopter assault on this area and along adjacent Cambodian Highway 22. Rumors of this operation did get to Saigon newsmen who flew out to our office, and by order of my division chief of staff, I didn't know nothing about nothing. Special Forces groups were operating, as I said, out of Tay Ninh and Nui Ba Dien, as Ron mentioned down here, conducting extensive operations, the training and arming of Chinese national, or Nungs, and Cambodian mercenaries inside Cambodia. No U.S. Army, regular U.S. Army troops would frequently encounter groups of these mercenaries crossing back and forth over the Cambodian border. They had special IDs which identified them, and were told and told anybody who came in contact with them they were not to be bothered. By order of JustPal, that's a joint United States Public Affairs office which is attached to the embassy staff in Saigon, the very existence of these clandestine groups was denied. I have here, it's very, very hard to see, and again, I apologize. This is a photo of a Cambodian mercenary force on a training mission inside Cambodia. The NLF. According to official MACV and MACOI policy, there is no National Liberation Front. Anything about enemy armor or helicopters? By MACV, MACOI, and JustPal directive, the enemy armored cars, armored personnel carriers, and tanks which were frequently sighted along the Cambodian border in War Zone C did not exist. The same thing went for enemy helicopters which were based in Cambodia. Rumor had it that they were used as command and control ships by COSVN, Central Office of South Vietnam, and they often carried North Vietnamese and Red Chinese advisors. For this reason, U.S. forces were under orders not to fire on these helicopters when they were sighted. It's an interesting ambiguity. In other words, although they didn't exist, if you saw one, don't shoot at it. 25th Infantry Division helicopter crews relished the idea, of course, of bringing down a VC chopper. And on at least one occasion, they chased one into Cambodia, flying above it and throwing ammo cases and tools at it, trying to bring it down without firing on it. Anything else that the Army felt might be detrimental to the best interests of the Army? I'll just give you a few small examples. One is the water hole sharing story. Shortly after my arrival in Vietnam, I did a story about Nui Ba Dinh, or Black Virgin Mountain, in which I mentioned that U.S. and VC forces shared a common water source, the only spring on the mountain. Anticipating no problem of release, I used the story before complete clearance procedures had been gone through.
You're listening to the Winter Soldier investigation over WBAI in New York City.
In the division newspaper and in our magazine and in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, to whom I sent a copy. I was severely reprimanded for the division chief of staff and MACV officials for letting it be known that the U.S. might in any way cooperate with the VC, like sharing a water hole. I have a lot more, but we're running on time. I just want to do one more thing. Harassment, intimidation, and prosecution of GIs who try to tell their story. This involves myself and all the members of the panel. As both information specialists and soldiers, we received frequent threats, written and verbal, in response to attempts to tell the truth. I have something here I want to show you. A USRV information directive entitled The Colonel's Colonels, datelined Information Office Headquarters, United States Army Republic of Vietnam, December 1967, says, and I quote, "There are a few military information officers out here who are not playing on the team. On occasion, these guys have downgraded one or another of the programs the U.S. is trying so hard to make work in Vietnam. And these information officers have done their sounding off to the press. Even though we are not thinking disloyal thoughts, out of our mouths tumble disloyal words. To argue your case in the press is not to show the courage of your convictions. It's a betrayal of a trust. It's disloyal to your country." Right here, folks. To ferret out these disloyal information officers, myself included, MACOI sent out Army spies armed with fake press cards to act as reporters. These guys would show up our division and say, "Hi, I'm Joe Jones with the New York Times. What do you know that you can't tell me?" This procedure was followed many times, but it got to the point where we knew, we thought we knew who was reporter and who were not. Also, MACV and USRV command information channels directed a constant barrage of intimidating and threatening instructions at the regular GI in the field about what he could and could not say about the war. Directives made it plain the Army could and would take all possible action against the GIs who told their own story, even after they were out. From the Tropic Lightning News, 25th Infantry Division, we have a story from MACV called Writing for Stateside Use, ? Get your story cleared first. It goes on at some length about how you may be asked to write for a civilian newspaper or speak before groups, and it says, but basically the thing to remember is all material on military subjects, articles, stories, newspaper columns, essays, drawings, and photographs must be cleared by Army authorities before you use it, you show it to anyone for publication. The rule has been made because many Army interests involve military security or matters of national interest. And of course, no soldier wants to help the enemy. Battlefield photographs are particularly sensitive because the enemy can convert them to use in propaganda. Why, this has actually happened! Incidentally, this same rule applies to speeches that you may have prepared for delivery after you are released. When you write or speak, concern yourself with matters about which you have only personal knowledge or for which you are responsible. It's just common sense to avoid getting into any matters involving our country's foreign policy. It's a directive from MACV. You can come and read it yourself.
Can I make a comment, Larry, on
this? Yeah, stick it right in there.
There was a young Marine, I forgot his name. He wasn't even involved with the informational services, but he got pissed one day, so he wrote a story and sent it to his hometown paper. Paper published it. And CID came down on this kid hard. And he was held incommunicado for about 3 weeks around a base area, then shipped off to Da Nang for courts-martial. And checking on him, I don't know what happened to him. No one seems to have seen or heard of him. It's the same with the young Army newscaster in Saigon, Robert Lawrence, who last year in January said that the Army was suppressing news. They immediately made him a chaplain's assistant and busted him, and nobody can find him anymore. I'd also like to relate to marriage to Vietnamese. I was engaged to a Vietnamese girl. She was finally killed, which made everyone rather happy, I would imagine. But chaplains, you go under so much harassment once you do this. Once you try to take out these papers, you meet cold stares. People shuffle you back and forth. It takes you almost a month before they start to make these papers. Now, Larry said it was 3 months, and the Marine Corps told me that it would be at least 6 months, and I had about 4 months to do in the NOM. Oh, I had about 5 months, I guess. And chaplains would come and tell me that God did not want me to marry inferiors. It was expressed a little differently, of course, but that's how it came out. Officers, staff NCOs, I was visited by them regularly, and essentially came down to the fact that the military didn't want to pollute the white American bloodstream with any more Asian blood than it has already polluted. Again, the remarks were a little bit more sophisticated than that, but that is essentially how it came out.
A lot of groans when you heard what the chaplain had told him at the 173rd Assault Helicopter Company at 25th Infantry Division in Kuchi. There's a chaplain who prays for the souls of the enemy on Sunday morning and earns flight pay as a door gunner on a helicopter during the rest of the week. This kind of threat that I was talking about, which I mentioned, speeches and everything, this extends also to your mail, to your letters. While I was in Vietnam, I sent what I called a holiday message from First Lieutenant Larry Rotman. On it, there's a small picture of a black medic, a white medic, and a Vietnamese treating a wounded Vietnamese. And there's a small card, little small thing beside it, which is a quote from William, General, honorably discharged William Tecumseh Sherman, saying, "I am sick and tired of war. Its glory is all moonshine. It is only those who have never fired a shot, nor heard the shrieks and groans of the wounded who cry aloud for blood, more vengeance, more desolation and destruction. War is cruel, and you cannot refine it. War is hell." That quote was taken from the Army Digest, a Department of Defense publication. For sending that card, I was court-martialed. I'll read you the charges. This is sent to inform you that action is being taken by this headquarters to determine your fitness for retention as a reserve officer in the United States Army. Your record indicates that in December 67, you printed and distributed at government expense. The at government expense was, I wrote free on my envelope, which you're allowed to do,